It's the first radio dub of the year, with Huckabee winning and Obama grinning from ear to ear. It's a sad radio dub this new year. Yes, folks, the first round in the presidential contest has been won by two nanny state, big government, open borders, socialist meddlers, both of whom successfully hid their desire to take our money and spend it behind clouds of spiritual squid ink. Oh boy, this is going to be a long year. Well, well, the Iowa caucuses caucused. What did we get? We got a number of lessons, that's what. Lesson one. Nobody much in Iowa gives a fig about foreign policy. Of the two big winners, Huckabee barely knows that the world beyond our borders exists, while Obama thinks it is full of poor and oppressed people waiting for us to take leadership in the United Nations, to lift them up by our amazing spiritual power. Oh, and using our money. That's your money and mine, gentle listener. Lesson two. Evangelicals will vote for an evangelical, even if he gives his stump speeches in ancient Sumerian. Lesson three. Western libertarian conservatism is not dead. Ron Paul and Fred Thompson between them got 21% in Iowa, almost as much as Mitt Romney. Hopes for a Paul Thompson or a Thompson-Paul ticket to run against Gore Obama next November are still alive. Lesson four, illegal immigration, which is transforming parts of Iowa into suburbs of Mexico City, is not much of an issue. Neither Mike Huckabee nor Barack Obama has ever shown any convincing sign of caring about this issue, nor even of having thought about it for more than 10 consecutive seconds. Lesson five, nobody much likes Hillary Clinton. Congratulations to Mike Huckabee, anyway, for having poked his finger in the eye of the Republican establishment, which has been getting much too big for its boots lately. You'd think that the people who gave us George W. Bush would have learned some humility. But no, this lesson had to come the hard way. I wish it had been someone other than Huckabee who'd done the eye-poking, though. It's nice that Huckabee's an evangelical who can pull in all the evangelical voters. But does he have any actual ideas about what ails the country? About how the federal government should deal with the problems we can foresee? About what federal arrangements best position us to deal with problems we can't foresee? None that I've heard. Huckabee's a big government populist who wants to tell us what we can eat, drink and smoke. His entire program is a retread of George W. Bush's compassionate conservatism, one of the worst ideas the human race has come up with since benevolent despotism, to which in fact it bears quite a strong resemblance. I don't mind the biblical squid ink as much as I dislike what it hides. For example, as governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee signed a law in March 2005 to allow state police to work with the feds at enforcing immigration law. To actually get the police doing that, though, Huckabee had to sign an agreement with the Department of Homeland Security. He never did. In his remaining 20 months in office since signing the law, he never made the move. That's how much Mike Huckabee cares about illegal immigration. About as much as George W. Bush does. Do we really want another fake conservative squandering yet more of our national substance on stupid ideas? What did the Democrats get from Iowa? Well, they got Barack Obama. Which is to say, they got compassionate conservatism with a good dash of 60s radicalism and some racial resentment. You don't want to look too closely at the origins of Obama's brand of squid ink either. While Huckabee's is good old tent meeting revivalist, prohibition and praise the Lord country values, with strong American roots going back into the 18th century, Obama's is the sinister, white-hating tribalism of his mentor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, with its roots in 1960s liberation theology and black power. The Obama people have been very busy indeed, airbrushing Reverend Wright out of Obama's biography, but Obama was acknowledging him as a mentor as late as March this year, and the title of Obama's second book, The Audacity of Hope, is taken from one of Wright's sermons. If you think Barack Obama has purged himself of all racial resentment, just listen to his wife and reflect on the fact that Obama lives with this woman, amicably, so far as one can tell. At some point, the fathomless yearning of white Americans for a black politician that they can like and trust is going to bump up against Obama's actual convictions. Again, it was nice to see the establishment favourite, Hillary Clinton, get a finger poked in her eye. But Obama's just as much a nanny state socialist as she is, and with racial hang-ups to boot. So my overall verdict on the Iowa caucuses? Good job on the poking of fingers in eyes there, fellas. Enjoyable to see that. Now, could we please get some real presidential candidates? Oil hit $100 a barrel last week. It only hit it for an instant, but we'll be back there. World oil production has been pretty flat for 4 years, in the teeth of increased demand. That's why the price has been increasing, duh. OPEC just put out a report saying that they will increase production by 5% a year. But a lot of the experts think this isn't possible. Some big producers, like Saudi Arabia, may just be lying about their reserves. No one really knows. Others, like Nigeria and Iraq, are chronically unstable. Still, demand grows, with India and China sucking in the stuff like 7-year-olds at milkshakes. Whether we've hit the fabulous oil peak yet, I don't know, and neither does anyone else. But for sure, the era of cheap oil is gone forever, and it won't be coming back. My advice would be to get that bicycle out of the garage, oil it up and inflate the tyres. As a founder member of the conservative faction known as the Hell With Them Hawks, I was neither shaken nor stirred by the murder of Benazir Bhutto. For a third world pseudo-nation in which an avaricious westernised elite lords it over a vast tribal peasant hinterland, the closest you can hope to get to rational consensual government is probably something run by the army, with the military commanders kept in line with big fat bribes from some generous foreign patron. The alternatives are a Latin American-style mercantile kleptocracy, which just riles up the peasants and leaves the army sullenly fingering their weapons. Or a religious fundamentalist despotism, with the most intelligent and productive citizens living in exile abroad. Benazir Bhutto represented the Latin American option. A spell in power for her would have done nothing for the peasants except increase their numbers, their poverty and their disgust, thereby fortifying jihadism, and it would have ticked off the army, leading to their eventual reassumption of power. It would, of course, have done wonders for the Bhutto family's Swiss bank accounts. Ms. Bhutto was a brave lady, playing politics in a very tough neighbourhood. She wasn't Joan of Arc, though, much less Margaret Thatcher, and neither Pakistan nor the USA had anything much to hope for from another Bhutto government. Probably the best thing for us would be a jihadist Pakistan, sinking into poverty and irrelevance under the rule of crazy mullahs. If they gave us any trouble, at least we would have a whole nation to go to war against in the good old-fashioned style, instead of playing hide-and-seek with insurgents in the back alleys of some place whose government was theoretically friendly to us. Pakistan, in fact, illustrates the old adage that in the Third World, politics starts with a soapbox, proceeds to a ballot box, and ends with a cartridge box. For yet another illustration of that truth, check out Kenya. They had an election over there. The president, Mwai Kibaki, was re-elected. The main opposition leader, Raila Odinga, has been a sore loser and has brought his supporters out onto the streets. 300 people have been killed and 70,000 made homeless. 50 of the people killed died when a mob set fire to a church they had taken sanctuary in. There are 40 different tribes in Kenya, and most of Kenyan politics is about promoting the interests of your tribe. Kibaki, the guy who won the election, is a Kikuyu. This tribe has been dominant in business and politics since the British left Kenya 44 years ago. Jomo Kenyatta, the father of the nation, was himself a Kikuyu. The people that Odinga has got out on the streets are mostly from his own tribe, the Luo tribe, the tribe Barack Obama's dad comes from, by the way. What we have here, in other words, is more of the joys of diversity. Burning a church full of people may sound a little brutal to you, but that's just how they celebrate diversity in Africa. And we all want to celebrate diversity, don't we? Of course we do. As basic life management rules go, I should think that the rule, "Don't mess with large hungry tigers," ought to be way up at the top of anyone's list. Well, three young men in San Francisco apparently misplaced that rule on Christmas Day. They got mauled by a tiger that seems to have leapt out of its enclosure. One of the young men is dead. The other two are badly hurt, though they're now out of hospital. We're now hearing from a police spokesman that an empty vodka bottle was found in the front seat of the car that the three lads had driven to the zoo. We're also hearing from visitors to the zoo that day that some young men, very likely the same ones, were seen taunting the big cats. We are further told by the New York Post that slingshots were found on the young men's persons. The attorney for the two survivors, Mark Garagos, denies all these stories. Quote, "There is no evidence of taunting whatsoever, because there was no taunting." Hold on a minute, Mark Garagos? Haven't I heard that name before? Let me just Google him here. Hold on a minute. What do we got? American criminal defense attorney, best known for defending pop star Michael Jackson, actress Winona Ryder, Gary Condit and Susan McDougal and Scott Peterson. So, would I be going out on a limb here if I were to say that the two surviving non-vodka-drinking, non-slingshot-owning, non-taunting survivors are fishing for some big bucks? And I'm not talking about the kind of bucks with antlers that you find in a zoo, either. To adapt the words of William Blake, "Tiger, tiger, burning bright, launched a lawsuit with your bite. The payout will be out of sight." You know that old joke about somewhere in the world, three times every second, a woman has a baby. We've got to find that woman and stop her. Well, here's the New Year's report from the United States Census Bureau. One person is born in the USA every 8 seconds. One person dies every 11 seconds. One immigrant settles here every 30 seconds. Net result, our population increases by about one person every 13 seconds. As our nation rings in the new year, the US Census Bureau has projected that the population on January 1st is 303,146,284. That's up nearly 1% from New Year's Day 2007. Now, you can get into trouble for talking about this stuff in conservative circles, which are mainly philoprogenitive. But someone has to do the dirty jobs around here. So here's an immigrant, that is me, to take up the broom. Obvious fact number one. Bigger populations are not better. If they were, China and India and Pakistan and Brazil and Nigeria would be paradises on earth, which, trust me, they're not. While Norway and Iceland and Slovenia and Singapore and Taiwan would be sinkholes of desperation and misery, which, trust me again, they're not. Obvious fact number two. The United States that we know and love was established by mainly Protestant Englishmen, with a scattering of Dutchmen and Germans, and it was later augmented by Catholic Irishmen and South Europeans, and by Jews from the Russian Empire. The current increases, both through births and immigration, are hardly at all from any of those groups, so it is fair to assume that the United States our grandchildren inhabit will be different from the one we know. It may retain its core identity, as the population enthusiasts assure us it will. But this is, as Ron Paul says of evolution, just a theory. Here's a handful of short items to see us out. Item: it was a quiet New Year's Eve in France. Only 372 cars were burned by youths. Last year, the youths burned 396 cars. When Nicolas Sarkozy was elected in May, youths burned 730 cars. France has the meanest youths around. Item: Michael Bloomberg, the extremely irritating mayor of New York, says he may run for president. Well, I hope he does. It means we'll get rid of him for a while. Bloomy thinks there is too much politics, too much rancor and disagreement. It gets in the way of a chief executive, you know, doing things. Well, speaking as a person who believes that most of what the federal government does is futile, and some of the rest actually wicked, I'd like to keep the rancor and disagreement going. In fact, I'd like to step it up a bit. Item: not counting a few Pacific islands, the USA is the world capital of obesity. 34% of us are technically obese. These numbers come from a survey done by something called the Trust for America's Health. The fattest state in the Union is Mississippi, where getting on for half the population are obese. Well, I can understand that. From what I recall of the climate in Mississippi, it's not exactly conducive to jogging. The report also confirms what we all know from observation. The poorer and blacker and more female you are, the more likely you are to be obese. Not to worry, though. With Mike Huckabee on the road to the White House now, we'll soon have federally supervised compulsory national dieting. Old Mike himself lost 100 pounds one time, so he's just the one to lead the national calisthenics broadcast every morning on TV. That will be the channel you're not allowed to turn off. And to make sure we're all doing our jumping jacks before breakfast, President Huckabee could appoint Mike Bloomberg as Surgeon General, with a federal squad of inspectors to go round and check on us. That'll take care of it. Item: 7 albino alligators have been stolen from a zoo in Brazil. These animals, which are said by officials to be worth around $10,000 each, have no skin pigment, and their eyes are a distinctive pink. Albino alligators. Who knew? So, if you see one of these critters waddling down Main Street, notify your nearest Brazilian consulate. Quote from the BBC website where I found this peculiar story. Quote, most of albino alligators born in the wild do not survive because their skin colour makes them vulnerable to attack. End quote. Well, thank goodness there's nothing like that in the human world. Well, that's it for Radio Derb this bright January morning. I repeat, it's going to be a long year. At the end of it, we shall likely have a president who actually believes that the federal government can improve our lives for us, and set the rest of the world to rights at the same time. My advice? Get yourself an offshore bank account, listener. These people are going to take your money and burn it. You have been warned.